David Ferruzio.
You said my name right.
Yeah?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I should. I forgot to mention that off camera.
What do people say? David Fergio?
They say Fergio, and Ferruggio is the prominent one, I think.
Yeah.
Typical, it's fair.
Typical,
it's a G in there.
Italian name from the East Coast.
Yeah, there's a couple vowels.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's usually how it works.
So David runs the Dead Talks podcast, which is, I've been following you for quite some time, and then I don't know why I never messaged you, but I just recently was like, yo, let's do a podcast, and you were open to coming down here from LA, so thanks for driving down. Really appreciate it.
Of course, man. I appreciate any invitation in general, but you know, you handled it in a great way, so I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, well, dude, you have the most different podcast out there. I can't think of anybody who has more of a pattern interrupt than you. Nobody else, I don't know if there's anybody else kind of focusing on the niche of death, but it's crazy because it's such a topic that is guaranteed for everybody, right? Like, not only are you going to die, but everybody you know is going to die, mm-hmm. but we don't talk about it.
Yeah, especially our culture. I think the Western civilization, because the more I've tapped into this discussion, you know, other cultures geographically around the world are historically way more open to it. And I think that's fascinating to me to cover, but also specifically in our side of the world, it's like shut up. It's a taboo conversation. But like you said, they say death and taxes, but not everyone pays taxes. Death is the one thing that is all certain, inevitable, going to happen, yet we don't want to confront it.
Yeah.
And I say we, the general we, a lot of people do, but it's just, I think there is a theme there that a lot of people don't.
Do you think people don't because it's painful?
I think it's a mix. Yeah. I think people just, when I say people, this is just my point of view, take it as whoever you want. You know, I think naturally we have this survival instinct. So we want to avoid anything that's dangerous or potentially life-threatening and just doesn't make us feel good. And the idea of death is painful. There's a human emotion to that. It's painful. Also backed with the idea that, you know, we don't know. I feel like people have a obsession, like we mentioned pre-recording, of knowing, and death is so unknown, at least the aftermath of it, mm-hmm. or what happens, if you will, that we're scared to maybe even just contemplate it not being something we want to hear. I don't know.
Yeah, I think because if we address it, it becomes real.
Yeah, but it's like if you don't address it, it's real.
Yeah.
Like it's the realest thing that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So it's just it's a bunch of contradictions. And again, it's like, and I feel a world that is specifically so divisive right now, the one underlying commonality is death.
Yeah.
And to me, death isn't, it's not a negative thing.
Like, yeah.
Emotionally, yes, I totally get it. I've been through it in a deep factor, but it's like, it expands life so much more. And like my personal affection with death, it completely changed my life for the better. And granted, I would change it all and all my lessons to have my dad back and the people I've lost.
Yep.
I'm not saying that.
Yep.
But that's what it was. That's what happened. And it's opened an entirely new life and lens for me.
Yeah. So you started Dead Talks because you lost your father on 9/11.
Yeah. I've said this before. The word loss is so funny. I didn't like misplace my father. But yeah, when I was 12, he was in the World Trade Center. And obviously, this is way before the podcast or even podcasts existed. But that first touch of death technically wasn't the first. Like, I've had grandparents die before that. My poor little hamster that I watched die was ironically very traumatic for me as a kid.
Yeah.
At like 8, 9 years old. But that was the first big one, if you will, losing my dad in the towers. And it evolved later on. You know, we can get in the nitty gritty as we talk, but it was obviously it was years and years later where the podcast was created, but it stemmed from that first experience
right.
of being exposed to death.
So throughout your life, how did your perception on death change? Like from, you know, obviously when you're a little kid, no matter what your religious background is, whatever, you just don't really grasp it, right? Like, but as you get older, your perception on it sort of changes. So how did that evolve for you, especially after losing your father?
I mean, it continues to evolve. It's I like to think that I'm open-minded to ideas. I try not to attach myself to any ideology and die by that stone. I think there's moral foundations that, you know, you live by and I live by that I will stick to. But then when it comes to something so open-ended like death and theory and religion, spirituality, whatever you want to say, I'm very moldable to by my own accord. Like,
yeah.
I'll define that, but I'm open to listening to everything, which comes back to the podcast. So it's evolved tremendously. Like, I was raised in a, you know, Catholic family, but not, my family wasn't exactly, I didn't go to church all the time, but I did confirmation.
Yeah, a Catholic family.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Literally, exactly. And so I don't identify to a certain religion. I kind of pull from a lot and I've learned a lot from these conversations. So it's evolved existentially as to the question of what happens after death, what I feel resonates with me, and just the grieving process, because that correlates too. Like, a lot of it is, how you handle grief, you know, is so individual, and in my opinion, there's no wrong way. It's only wrong if you're feeling it detrimentally to your life, then maybe you should consider something else. You're not feeling good.
Right.
And you're not going to feel good during grief. That's not what I'm saying. But as you evolve. So like the stories that I've had, whether it's near death experiences, mediums, whatever you believe, or just people's personal paranormal activities and just how they handle grief. And as a human, I've heard so many different stories that I keep getting more exposed to new ideas and new experiences, that the more I hear, it's almost like the less I know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just throw my hands up and say, I don't know, but this resonates with me, if that makes sense.
What's the common thing that comes with that? Like what's the common place that ties all of this together?
Death. But other than that, I mean, specifically, you know, it sounds cliche, but I'll go back to like the grief experience, how I see it. And then also the afterlife experiences, because I've had a lot of those conversations with an open mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, I take it with that. Grief in particular, and it's going to sound cliche, but again, I think cliches exist for a reason. The one thing I've always heard is that everyone finally makes the decision. Again, it ends up being a choice. And I think everything we do ends up being a choice, whether you want to accept that or not. And I think once people avoid saying a lot of these things are a choice, because it puts the onus on you. It puts the responsibility on you to make a decision and take grasp of whatever circumstance is happening to you. And then I feel like when you let go of the idea that it's not a choice, I can't decide just to get out of grief, it's not going to happen like that. But it kind of like takes the onus off you. Like, now this happened to me, so I can be like this, which is fine. I'm not trying to be insensitive, but that's just how I see it. But the ultimate commonality that I keep seeing is you allow yourself to feel it. Mm. And I think it's so easy to distract yourself, to go dive into work, which sometimes can be a great thing. So again, this isn't a formula to say this is going to work for you. This is how I see it. But we constantly want to distract ourselves and not allow ourselves to feel it. We may feel it unconsciously, like it might just be sad, this or that. I'm talking about literally sitting in it, not distracting you. Even if you're sitting on the couch for a couple moments, feel it. Allow yourself to feel it, and sometimes not define the feelings we have. Like, I feel this because that happened, this happened. That's a healthy practice too, I think. But sometimes you just gotta allow yourself to go through it. Cry, scream, whatever it is, allow yourself to physically feel it. And once people make that decision to not avoid it and run away from it, I feel like that is the catapulting to the journey that is going to take time to healing, if you will. And always people say, I'm not fully healed. Yeah, you're not. So grief is like a lightning strike on a bark of a tree. Like, that tree's going to grow around that, but that burnt part of the bark is going to be there.
That's a good point.
I didn't come up with that. So I forgot who told me that, but credit to that person.
Yeah.
And then outside of that commonality, where I feel like it's a choice and to allow yourself to feel, and you got to figure that out. That's an individual journey. I think that's why it's important to take maybe some of the things I'm saying or you'd experience and then kind of create your own. But then with the afterlife, I don't know if that's where you want to go.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
So I've had a lot of near-death experiences. I see a lot of comments saying, you know, it's bullshit. Sure, there's people that are lying in every aspect of life. So pull from it what you will.
Dude, but the near-death experiences, like, it has shifted my whole perception of reality.
Same.
You know?
It's wild.
Yeah.
Well, have you like listened to them? Or
fuck yeah, bro. Yeah. That I am. You ask my girlfriend, she is so annoyed by like how many I listen to. And the reason why is I've had a couple experiences like that myself. I don't know if I can call them near-death experiences, but we can dive into it. But I had a straight up, you know, I don't know. I guess I'll just dive into it. So
head first, baby. Let's go.
So I had mentioned that I've been sober for 8 years. You know, I drank really, really heavy when I was in my, you know, high school to, you know, early 20s. Stopped drinking at 23. But when I was like 19, I had this. So from my perception, I'm driving down the street, right? I've got my girlfriend at the time and one of my best friends in the backseat of the car. And all of a sudden, this memory from a dream that I had the night before was like I was reliving it. Like, I had completely forgotten it from the night before until this moment while we're driving. I literally had to pull over and I couldn't even talk. I was like, oh my God. I was trying to explain it to this. And I'm like, and keep in mind, I was an atheist. I didn't believe in God. I thought when we die, we just return to the earth, whatever. You know, I didn't believe in any of the spiritual stuff. I didn't believe in ghosts, goblins, demons, none of that. Right. So to me, the feeling that I was feeling, and I'll explain what happened, but the feeling returned to me where I was like, oh my God. Oh yeah. this is temporary. This isn't, you know, and I was trying to explain it to them. Like, I had this dream and they were just like, I am not, you know, they weren't going to get it. So I just blew it off. But really what happened was, I don't know at what point this happened. I think that maybe my heart stopped or something, because I sort of wrote this experience off until I started hearing near-death experience videos. And then I'm like, oh my God, all of these are very similar, like everything about this. So basically I'm sleeping and all of a sudden I'm in like a womb, like is what it felt like. I can't describe, like, I don't know how to describe it, but I'm in this space where I feel completely 100% content. Like, there are no negatives.
This is the dream.
This is like, yeah, I mean, I don't know if it was, I don't know what it was, but it was different than anything else. Yes. It was the realest, real, it was like I latched onto something that I had completely, like, you know, when you wake up from a dream and you realize you had like a really bad dream and you realize that it was a dream and you're like, oh, thank God. It was like that, but reversed, right? And again, this is the first experience of any kind that I even had a glimpse into anything that wasn't when we die, we just, it's black. It's over, right? So I'm in this like incubator. I don't know how to describe it. Like, it felt like motherly, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know at what point I sort of evolve into like a body. Like, I had like a body, not a body, but like a, like an energy body. Mm-hmm. And this is going to sound dumb. The only way I can describe it is like a starfish.
It's not dumb.
It feels dumb because I felt like literally like Patrick from SpongeBob,
okay,
right?
Okay, now that's dumb.
No, I know, yeah, no, I mean, Patrick's dumb. but I feel this like I definitely have a body in these little appendages. Mm-hmm. Like, it sounds so weird. And it goes from me being in this space to being in this kind of tunnel. And it's like purple, like almost like this color, like this purple and pink tunnel. And I'm going through like, you know, like when you... it's like you're getting ready to go on a roller coaster and you're kind of going up. It's like kind of slow,
yep.
Sort of like a buildup. And I'm remembering. And like at the same time, I'm feeling this complete unconditional love, this complete, like, I can't even describe. And when I hear these near-death experiences, I see people have the same reaction. I'm like, it's whatever this is, it's the same exact place.
Yep.
Go through this kind of tunnel of light. And I'm remembering all of this, like, oh my God, how could I think that I was this person? How could I believe that when we die, we maybe go to hell? Or like, it was just this, like, oh yeah, we return back to this positive place.
And it completely shifted the way you see everything?
Well, dude, we're going through this tunnel thing, and it's like, I'm asking all these questions and immediately getting answers. And I can't even tell you what the questions or answers were. It's like, that's wiped. But like, I felt like completely confident, completely like, okay, this is like, I'm not even explaining this well, cause I'm more in the feeling of it in my head than
you're explaining.
Like,
I get, it's hard to explain, but you're explaining it.
But I will remember, I will explain the one thing that I remember very clearly is I was like wiggling my arms in like joy and making this like, I don't know if it was like a noise or a frequency, but like this, woo, like I was excited and I kept speeding up and this overbearing feeling of love kept just washing over me like this. Literally everything in life that we chase, drugs, women, money, cars, anything to fill that hole. This way, I was completely complete in this moment. There was no fear. There was no anxiety. There was no lack of trust. There was 100% safe forever, like, I don't know, it was like I was in eternity, bro. Like, time and space wasn't real, but I'm being flung through this thing and it keeps getting faster and faster, and every second that it gets faster the feeling gets more intense, and I'm wiggling and I don't know if it's like a frequency or what, but I'm going so fast and so like, just, it's getting so powerful that I remember thinking, if this continues to go up, which it doesn't seem like it's going to stop, I'm going to explode. I'm going to die, but I can't die. And I'm like going through this in my head. And then, but it's not like I woke up and I remember that. I remember this as we're driving the next day.
It just popped in.
It's like, I remember the dream, you know, I don't know how to describe it. Maybe it happened while I was driving. I don't know. Like, but that's, I'm telling you, I've had a lot of crazy dreams. never anything like that. And I've never had anything like that since, not like that.
It's different.
But yeah.
I can't speak from that from an experiential set besides smoking DMT. That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
Because I was like, maybe you accidentally smoked DMT because I felt like that. But it's, and I think that goes back to the conversation that people don't really buy into it. That's cool. Whatever. Believe whatever you want. But it's, and it's like, prove it. Show me this time. I'm like, hey, I don't think it's provable right now. Like, maybe it's something you can't prove right now. We just can't fathom it, can't show it scientifically, whatever. Until you have an experience like that, like you just explained.
Yeah.
And even though you did explain it thoroughly.
But I didn't. I sat here and mumbled for 10 minutes.
I understood. I think you have to give yourself a little grace because you're trying to explain the unexplainable because it's an experience.
Yeah.
Like, it's like people say, what was DMT like? I could try to explain it, but like, they're like, what?
Ineffable.
It's like, you just got to do it. I'm not telling you to do it. I'm not subscribing, saying you have to, but it's like certain experiences that you have. You can try to explain it. People can grasp it as much as they can. But until you experience it and you just know,
sometimes
you just got to listen to that. And I think that's a lot of those near-death experience stories. Besides the fact that there are thousands and thousands, sure, there's some BSers along the way.
Yeah.
You can find a BS accountant. It's part of life.
Yeah.
But there are so many consistencies that a lot kind of tapped into what you were saying is that overwhelming feeling that there's some interesting stories within their experiences. Like the transitional part seems to be unique to you.
Yeah.
Like there is a trend, like when people say they cross over, however you want to call it, that transition period, I had a conversation yesterday with a medium that was explaining it through her eyes, that transition period, you're going to see what relates to you in this human world. So maybe you're Catholic, Muslim, don't believe this, that's you. You are going to see something before whatever's next that will be easily digestible to your human mind,
right,
which makes sense. So if you saw God, that's great. If you didn't see God, that's fine, because maybe it relates to what the life you live. You might see things that are comforting to you, whether it's a starfish or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
It's like you might see that, but after that, it seems like it's all the same for everyone. And you'd have this moment of realization that seemed like you had. It's like, oh, wait, A, this might have been familiar. Like, this felt like home.
Yeah.
And it's always just a pure peace, utopia, understanding. It's like a feeling that you can't describe that I haven't personally experienced, even though when I was under that dimethyltryptamine, there was a point where I was like, oh, and I'm not relating it to a near-death experience, even though they consider it like the dying molecule, because the experience seems to tap into each other. I was like, oh, I don't know what the answers were, what the questions were, kind of what you said. But I was like, all my questions are answered. I know, like, I almost know everything. Everything makes sense, and it's all good.
Yeah.
And there's way more details with all these conversations that I've had, but it's always that consistency of, oh, this feels home. Having my mom, like, we're good. And whatever's next after that, which I think continues on, we're good.
The all good is a thing that I never felt before that. And and here's the thing is I don't completely, like, I'm not 100% confident in that all good, right? Like, I was in that moment for sure, without a doubt. I can't even describe it. But once I started hearing these near-death experience videos, like recently, like within the last 2 or 3 years, and I lost my sister in 2019 to suicide. We'll dive into that. But I started seeing these videos and I was like, these are all the near-death experiences are different in their own ways. Like, makes sense what you're saying about the transition. But there's always this common thing. And the one thing that I notice is it's the way that people describe it. Mm-hmm. The feeling, the remembrance of that we're all good, we're home, we're whatever this is, and that there's something else. Like, the one thing that I realized out of all of these interviews, and dude, I've literally watched hundreds of them. Like, there was a point where, again, my girlfriend was like, can you stop coming to bed with a YouTube video on about a near-death experience? But I was just so involved in learning this. But it's real. Something is real.
Something is real.
Yeah.
And it can be experiential. Again, I haven't had a near-death experience. I've just heard so much and hear so many consistencies, like you're saying, and this, that, and the other, and some partial experiences that I've had, and that's what I think. And whether you take it's, and it's, when I ask these mediums, like, oh, they want to prove it, show me the proof. Like, all right, just don't believe it. What do you want me to say? Like, you don't have to believe it. Just don't believe it. It's fine. If it doesn't work, resonate with you, that's all good. My lens, this is not it. This is not it. And I think, I was talking to an atheist recently on my. This guy always comments on stuff, and it's always a fun conversation because we have opposing views, but we're just having a dialogue, and it's fun.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Well, yeah, but if there's an afterlife, doesn't it make life like less meaningful? Like, no, to me, it does the opposite. Knowing there's more, it almost not only takes the pressure off, but it gives me like potential more meaning to live this life. It just makes me think deeper without any provability. I'm just like, I think maybe if there is more, maybe we are. I think maybe we're here to learn. And that's another consistency in your death experiences. A lot of these people say, oh, we're just. besides the fact that they say we chose this life, which is another hard one for people to get, like, why would you choose a life of misery, this, that, and the other? But we're here to learn.
Yeah.
And the way I extrapolate it to try to understand it for myself, for whatever reason, it's like, think about the life we live now as a human and not even thinking about the afterlife. We're constantly trying to learn for the most part. I think if you're hopefully progressing and want to evolve, we're constantly learning. We're constantly trying to kind of come to this place of growth. And if you extrapolate that as a human in our one life, we're constantly trying to grow, get better, get more existential, whatever it may be. We want to get better and better and evolve. Extrapolate that to another level of, we don't even understand, like soul, like the next life. Maybe we're just a piece of that. And even there, it's just another expansive part of that, constantly trying to grow. So maybe we're supposed to be in this life to evolve and come to a higher a level of enlightenment on that level, whatever
yeah.
that means.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if that made sense. But it's like, to me, this world is so wild. It's just the most routine shit. Like gravity, like I don't even know how to explain gravity. I can Google it. They'll tell me. I still don't get it. You can't see it, but it's holding this down. It changes. What the fuck is that?
Yeah.
And then like, yeah, but the afterlife is impossible. How big is the universe? Like, yeah. I'm going like stoner, smoking too much thought. But to me, that makes some like, it's when people say it's an impossibility, I'm like, yeah, you need it. I'm like, cool. I'm like, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's so.
Yeah.
I'm not saying for sure I know. But to me, you think about the expansiveness of the universe, all these weird shit that happens. Like, people are going to be able to watch us. None of this stuff makes any sense. And I'm like, but an afterlife is impossible? The impossibility remark is what kind of grinds my gears. I don't take it personally.
Yeah.
I'm going to say grind my gears. I'm being facetious. But it's like, there's just too much wild shit out there for me to think this is it. Like,
yeah.
There's no way.
Dude, 100,
there's a way.
Yeah.
But there's no way. Well, like, I'll die on that branch.
I mean, from somebody who used to be an atheist to being now whatever I am now, a Christian, I don't know. Like, I am definitely spiritual, and I definitely know that there's something else out there. But I think the common tie is that people just want to know. They want to feel like they know, mm-hmm. right? So, like, when you're an atheist, I don't know any atheist that truly, truly wants that to be the truth, right? Like, I know a lot of atheists that will never acknowledge any kind of religion or spirituality or anything, but it's like deep down, like, don't you want there to be a God or like an afterlife or, you know, like.
That makes sense. The same guy I was talking to, the same thing. He's like, I want to believe, but I just don't. So they might just be more objective and just like a lot of scientists are like, had Neil deGrasse on. He was like, don't you remember? You're like, do you remember what happened before you died? I'm like, no. He's like, exactly. That's what it is. I'm like, okay, that's a theory still. That's not provable. And then my existential philosophizing of that is, if we say hypothetically, if you do believe there's an afterlife, there's something before, or I mean, how wasn't there in my opinion, but if you don't believe that, think about if there was. If we remembered what was before, whether it's multiple lives or just being in another dimension, we would not be able to operate in this life knowing that there was a before. So in my head, I'm like, if this was a system or a theory, we have to have that amnesia. Because we wouldn't be able to be having a conversation. Like, we wouldn't be able to operate if we knew what was before. How would you live this life and be able to operate in this life if you did know it was before? But again, like, there's the idea of saying, like, that's proof. That's still not proof.
Yeah.
In both sides. Like, if you don't have the proof to prove there's an afterlife, I get that. But can you prove to me that there is no afterlife?
Right.
In my head, I mean, people say, well, you die, your body's... But yeah, but that's still not enough for me.
Yeah.
Same thing it isn't for you. That's how I see it.
Yeah. Well, I hear a lot of people relate it to, like... Okay.
This is fun. I love talking about this.
Yeah, me too, man. That's like, you're a TV, right? Let's say you're a TV. If I smash the TV and completely make it unreceptive, is the signal still there to ESPN or whatever? Like, it's still out there.
Yep.
It's just not here. And I think that when somebody dies, you feel that they're not here anymore. Like, you look at their... I remember, you know, when my grandfather died, I remember seeing his body and being like, that's not him.
It's not us.
Like, he's not even there, you know? And I felt so detached from it.
Yeah, and we hear that in just ancient religion, historical context, stories. It's just so much stuff going out there about people saying the same thing. I feel like right now, it's honestly like it's a good time for these conversations that I feel like I have in the podcast and that we're having, because I think there's like a slow shift. Like, I forget what the name of the book was, Celestine Prophecy, I think it was, a fictional story kind of talking about a existential revolution where it was like, okay, we being humans used to be asking the question, who are we? Where do we come from? These philosophical, like, what is all this? That was always around in ancient times. Like, you just have, like, you see it in writings, this, that, and the other. And then throughout history, it started becoming focused on innovation, technology, industrial revolution, whatever. And we got obsessed with that, blah, blah, blah. And then now I feel like we're still going to be focused on all that stuff and the evolution of technology, et cetera, et cetera. But I feel like now maybe it was COVID, which I think was a big deal of people facing the mortality, starting asking these again, these existential questions and start confronting it a little bit more.
Yeah.
I feel like we're at a time where people are kind of waking up to at least questioning it, as opposed to being like, you know, dying on that pole that this is so. But it's like, I think that is a big step. It's just all I ask is for people just to ask those questions and really think about it, not just in your lens, but just a wider lens of maybe, let's say maybe there's more. And I think that contemplation just opens up so many different doors, which gives more meaning to your life. It's not just about what the afterlife is. Like, by understanding and contemplating what may or may not be, shifts the entire way you live this life.
Yeah.
So like, death may seem like the end. I don't believe it is. But regardless, that contemplation, that feeling it and seeing what resonates with you will change your life now. So don't just think about it as just the death. Think about how that is going to affect your life now.
Right.
It's like, to me, that's what shaped my evolution of contemplating that and hearing people's amazing stories about how they deal with losing someone. It just shifts your perspective on life, and it comes back to perspective. This entire life is whatever glasses we're wearing, that's the prescription we're going to see.
Right.
And it's like, that is, I think it comes, it sounds so simple, but I truly believe that that's what it is.
Yeah.
And by having these conversations, by hearing people's stories with an open mind and not just sticking to your guns, you can still stick to your guns afterwards if you don't buy it. Straight up, cool. It's fine. But just be open to these conversations and just expand our mind and listen to people's stories like yours.
Yeah.
Even if you can't fully grasp it, it's like, I just think it can change our life for the better by facing death. That's how I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I mean, we learn from other people's experiences and we haven't experienced it all. So I think that if you're not open-minded, you're not going to grow, you know?
No, I feel that. I think that makes sense.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the near-death experiences. I know you've had a lot of that sort of stuff on your show.
Mm-hmm.
What's one of your favorite near-death experiences?
They're all pretty wild, but the most recent one, I had a woman on a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, and it kind of correlates to what you were saying, but a lot of it is, again, I'll kind of parlay it all together, how there's the consistencies. So she, Mary Helen Hensley is her name. I think Dr. Mary Helen Hensley, sorry if I butchered that. She was talking about that she had making a left turn, and she got in a horrible car wreck where essentially she like broke her neck, her back was messed up. But before that, she's explaining that she's like, David, before it happened, everything went in slow motion, incredible slow motion. Before I saw the car coming, but it was like Matrix slow motion. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, this seems familiar. Like I felt this before, whatever it was. I knew this was going to happen. I knew I was going to die. Like slow motion. She's able to like have these thoughts consciously, if you want to call it, before it happened. And she goes, David, as soon as that happened, I knew the impact was going to come. I knew I was going to, quote unquote, die, and had the option to exit out of my body, or do I want to experience this? I can stay in my body, or just my soul can eject, which is, I'm going to go back and forth. But the consistencies are that soul ejection, which relates to me, people, big fear of death is how you're going to die. I don't want to suffer. But a common theme that I've heard and through like Dolores Cannon or other books, this, that, and the other, was theorizing that your soul ejects before that death. So even though we may see suffering happening before they die, your soul might not even be there.
Right.
So you're not really, it's just the meat bag that we're seeing having this experience, but you're not really experiencing it. So the way she put it was, I don't need to, this is going to be horrible. Like she's saying it in a funny way. It's like, I don't need to feel this shit. Like, that's going to be terrible. I'm just going to get out of here. So you eject from your body. And with the medium I spoke to yesterday, says the same thing, several mediums and similar near-death experiences that we eject from our body. And then you kind of have a moment of witnessing what's happening below.
Right.
An out-of-body experience.
Yep.
So she's like, Dave, I'm floating above this car scene. And I'm seeing things happen. I'm seeing my lifeless body, but I'm not seeing it in a place of like shock. I'm just like, oh, like you're just like looking at traffic. Just like, this is, oh yeah, okay. I kind of remember this. This like seems familiar. I'm not freaking out. But she's observing the scene. And then something happened with that guy that came to the car, or she witnessed someone leaving a phone number on the front seat. And she was like, while she's out of her body, she's like, wait, that car looks familiar. I know that woman. I went to college with her, but why was she over here? And then it was fast forwarding. She was able to confirm seeing the guy come to a car and that woman later when she got out of the hospital. So to her, again, I don't have documents to prove it, but she was explaining that all these things she saw was verified later.
Right.
But again, back to the familiarity of it, if I'm pronouncing that word right, she's like, oh, she came to terms that we chose this life. Like
right.
When she went back, when she left the outer body experience and went to the other dimension, she had that life review that you constantly hear. And this is a woman that was raised Southern Baptist, religious, and she was like expecting God. She said, God never came. She's like, I'm not saying it's not real. I didn't see God. So she had a different understanding of what was next, but she had this life review and ultimately understood that she chose this life.
Mm.
And the choosing of the life is another consistency that I've heard about multiple near-death experiences. Well, we chose this life, and that is what kind of confuses people. And at first it confused me too, because like, why would anyone choose suffering or homeless, this, that, and the other, all the horrible things that happen. Makes like, but I just think from a human experience, from our minds, like that just, that won't make, ever make sense. Like, well, who the hell would choose that?
Well, think about this, right? Like a lot of people play simulation games, right? Like in Grand Theft Auto, they have these role-playing servers where a lot of people will literally like deliver pizzas and like play these like, you know what I mean? Like completely boring roles where it's just everyday stuff. Or like, you know, a lot of times somebody gets bored and they play Grand Theft Auto and they try to drive like normal in traffic. And like, you don't want that life really, but you're, it's like you're trying to experience something. So
That's a great way to say it. And I think with, just to clarify with the choice, what I've heard, it's like, yeah, you choose certain experiences to have to, again, theorizing the idea of it. You might choose this life, like looking at my life on a fucking iPad, and it's like, oh, Dave Ferrugio, he's going to lose his dad on September 11th, experience crazy grief. I wonder, I haven't really experienced that any of my assuming the reincarnation. I want to evolve and learn from that and feel that so I can understand that and evolve even as a soul, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, I think people get it confused with, oh, so I don't make choices here on this earth. And you can still not mess it up. You can still make different decisions. So it's almost like an outline.
Yeah.
But you can still make these free will decisions. So I feel like it's a perfect blend of destiny perhaps and free will. You can still make that turn
right
and maybe have still have a different experience, so we still have control, but at the same time you're still choosing this life for an experience. And to parlay the idea with, you know, so the Grand Theft Auto example of trying this life, you ever have Alan Watts?
Yeah, of course.
So I listen to him all the time. I think he's just fun to listen to. He's funny.
Yeah.
He was explaining it one time, not the same theory, but the idea of maybe living a thousand lives. Like, put yourself, just pretend for a moment, anyone listening, that you had the option to live as many lives as you want. Like, literally as many. You could choose your life, kind of what we're saying. And after a while, you might, the first 100 lives, you might be like rich, wealthy, experience all the pleasures. After 1,500 lives, you might be like, okay, like this is, you might get bored of that. You might be like, okay, what happens if I tweak that or experience something dangerous, and they come back out of it, you're like, well, that was a close shave. That was kind of fun. And you keep pushing the limits. And like, after 1,000 lives, just that, you just keep trying to experience more and more. You might experience the bad shit just to see what it feels like.
Yeah.
And to me, that hit home with me, assuming like maybe we have these multiple lives, but it kind of correlated with the idea of wanting to experience this stuff. But in our head, knowing the pain and sorrow of life, it is hard to contemplate. Why would I be someone who was assaulted or a woman that was raped or something horrible?
Yeah.
And it gets offensive to people because I'm not mitigating those experiences, but it's like hard to gather and understand that be a possibility. But when you really look beyond the veil of that, of understanding what it feels like, I was like, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, right.
As in a crazy way, if that also makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people always use the reference to argue religion or proof of God or whatever, or the idea of God is like, well, if there was a God, why would there be the Holocaust, right? Mm-hmm.
It's a fair argument.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not like justified, but at the same time, if you just have fun with the idea, if you will, and not correlating fun with the Holocaust, like that, it almost gives it meaning in some way. Because then, if it was just existing for pure evil and like the world is this, that, and the other, but if there hopefully is a reason for that suffering, because at the end of the day, I believe there might be suffering here, but I think that suffering. We say suffering is life. It's like a Buddhist approach, right? It's like suffering, and maybe that's why we're here.
Yeah.
We're here to suffer, and amongst the suffering, find the beauty and the pleasure that does come with it. But maybe we are here to suffer, and that's just the what it is. We're all suffering. People say death and all that stuff isn't fair, but to me, I'm like, maybe it is fair because we're all dying. We're all suffering in different ways to some heavy extremes like you just mentioned that I cannot relate to, and it's horrible. It's terribly sad. But maybe I believe there is a reason for it that we can never fathom. Like, what is there a reason for something like terrible like that? There's no reason from our lens.
Right.
But I just believe there's a much bigger picture that, like you said, when you got to your place, you'd be like, oh. Yep. And that's what this woman felt. She got to a place, she's like, oh. And it's just an understanding coming back to this home. They're like, okay, that makes sense. Now I get it.
Yep.
Because you're not human anymore. We're not thinking with our ego.
Is it Tom Campbell that does the My Big Toe? You don't know, dude. You got to get him.
You put me on to some people.
I think he's a physicist. Leo, can you look that up? Just look up Tom Campbell, My Big Toe.
My sisters always used to make fun of my big toe. I do have a big toe.
Oh, yeah? Well, his toe is theory of everything. So he's a scientist, and he did consciousness studies. Okay. So his whole thing, you see anything on that? Yeah, so he's a a physicist that went into metaphysics and did some kind of research. I think he had some sort of collaboration with like the Stargate program, if you ever heard of that, and like the CIA Gateway experiments.
Okay, yeah.
The that institute, I think in Stanford, or there was an institute that the CIA funded, a research institute, and they did like out of body experiences and astral projection. Like,
I'm not sure the name, but I've heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And they, I mean, they straight up found like a Russian submarine and all this that was being built and all this stuff. Like, it was legit. Like, there was a real thing.
Remote
there.
Traveling? What is it called?
Yeah. Remote observation or something
like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
It's wild shit that we don't even know about.
Yeah.
Even though now we kind of know about it.
Yeah.
I just, like, to me, I can't, I feel like nothing's impossible. I'm not saying that in like a Nike logo type shit, but it's just, I think there's just so much more that we just don't know. And I think it's important to just, okay, I have no idea.
Right.
As soon as we let go of that release of not knowing, I feel like life opens up.
Yeah. So let's go back to, how'd you grow up? So Catholic, typical East Coast kind of family?
Yeah, Italian, Christian, Catholic, family, yeah.
Okay. And so you want to get into what happened with your dad?
Yeah, whatever you want.
Okay, sure. Let's dive in. Tell me the story.
Well, there was a day called September 11th, and I think we all know what happened then, and my dad was in Tower 1. This was the first one that got hit, second the one that went down. I was 12, and I don't know how much detail you want, but like that day?
Yeah, whatever you're good.
There's a lot. So it's a lot that it's wild that I don't remember after I first saw it happen. So my mom decided to leave me in school that day, which, again, I think that was the way to do it. She was going to pull me home as soon as it happened, which she didn't know. It was chaos going home, so yeah. She's like, let me get things together, and then just he'll stay in school. So I was in seventh grade. My buddy Jeff walked into the first period. He was always late. And he's like, hey, Dave, doesn't your dad work at the World Trade Center? I'm like, yeah, why? He's like, a plane flew into the building. I'm like, I'm 12 years old. I'm like, what is that? What does that even mean? What do you mean a plane flew into the building?
Yeah.
Try making a call at the office, and they wouldn't let me make calls. My town was a big commuter town, so a lot of people worked in the city. So they were just kind of like, can't have everyone make a phone call.
Yeah, Jersey or?
Jersey, yes. Okay. Central Jersey, like an hour outside of New York. And I remember just going through the day, like my friends were making fun of me because I was worried. They didn't know what was going on. And then I went through the whole day just wondering what was happening. Didn't see anything, didn't hear anything else. I was walking home with my best friend, James. And I remember walking around the corner for the first time and I saw the cars outside. I was like, okay. Like
police cars?
No, family cars. Just like the whole cul-de-sac was filled with cars. Like people were at my house. I'm like, all right, something went down seriously, obviously, besides what I already knew. I remember my mom, we walked to the house. My mom separated me and James, and I remember seeing my cousins in the living room looking at the TV with just a empty face. And people were trying to keep me away from the television. And I forced myself to there. And I just looked at the TV and saw the footage for the first time. I remember breaking down. And then it was like,
oh, so you weren't seeing it at school?
No, nothing. Yeah. No, they were keeping away from the kids. They didn't show us. We were young, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And so the first time I saw it was, which is wild to think about. I'm like, this is maybe 3 o'clock. Towers get hit at like 8:46, whatever it was, went down a couple an hour or two later. It was all done. So while I was looking back at it again, I'm like, damn, the whole time at school, this was all happening while I didn't know what was happening really. Halfway through the school day, it was done. Buildings went down. My dad was gone already. And I was still had no idea what was going on. Then fast forward to me seeing the replay. Like I was watching replays. And that was the first time I saw it and everything went black. It was like, I still remember things after, of course, but there's a lot of shit that I don't remember what happened. And it was like my body just saying, yo, shut this too much. Oh, system overload. It's going to be in you forever. You're going to have to figure this out later. And that's how my journey was. It wasn't so much remembering how I felt and the details as a child growing up, as a teenager. I know I think there was anger in there that came out, unfortunately, to my mom. And I was a little bit of an angry kid growing up, like frustrated. But I don't know if looking back at it, like I snapped back. We still had a great relationship, but I was definitely a pain in the ass to my mom. And she did everything right. So she didn't deserve any of that, but I was a young kid. I don't feel guilty about it because like I was just, that's how I handled it.
Yeah.
And now, you know, me and my family, I wouldn't be like how I am, better or for worse, without my mom. Like anything good I have is because of my family. And so a lot of that stuff, I just don't remember, but it felt as if my body shut that shit down because it's too traumatic to even comprehend as a kid, let alone at any age. And it was like, I have to deal with that shit later. So a lot of my journey with grief was growing up, becoming a man, maturing, and then working shit out as I got older.
Yeah.
And like, that's why I'm good now. I can easily talk about it. I have a very sick sense of humor. So humor is not a deflection for me. It's a healing mechanism, but it's like, I'm comfortable with it at this point, but it's been 23 years. So a lot of my journey of the grief process obviously happened when I was a kid, maybe unconsciously, but it really evolved as I got older and was, you know, more of a man to understand it.
Yeah. And what do you remember what floor he was on?
He was on the 105th floor.
Wow.
His Cantor Fitzgerald was a company, so they lost the most people, and his whole business was like wiped. So It's wild. And I've been up there before, which is I go back and forth with time and just think about things and put myself in that position. And I remember my dad took me to work and had those like floor to ceiling windows. So on the 105th floor, I don't remember if there's like 108. It's pretty much the top.
Yeah.
I remember just putting my face against the window and like leaning into it, looking down from the 105th floor, how crazy high I was.
Yeah.
I remember that moment. It was exciting as a kid, but then I bring it back. I'm like, fuck. Like they were just, they had no shot.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to a guy that apparently was one of very few survivors that I believe was above the plane crash and still got out.
Wow.
I have him on the podcast, but it was like he had no shot. And then I start, you know, my imagination starts running as like, did he feel it? Was he conscious when it hit? Did he try to get out?
Yeah.
What happened? You start putting yourself there. And then my exposure therapy, which I learned to label it as accidentally, was I constantly watched the footage. Over like thousands, and even to date, sometimes now, a lot less now, but sometimes on the anniversary, I'll just put it on to maybe feel something and put myself there because I wish I was there.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think that actually oddly, I don't know if it made me a sociopath, but I think it helped me constantly watching, as violent as it was. I always watched the footage.
Yeah.
Constantly looking at it from different angles, seeing people's reactions on the street, watching the plane go into the building over and over, replay, replay, replay. And my family was the opposite. Like, I think my mom saw it once and never again, but I had to put myself through that to see it. And I don't know what that did, but I think it aligns with just having to see it, putting myself there to feel it.
Yeah.
And I think it correlates again to allowing myself to feel it. And I even maybe when I wasn't feeling it, that made me feel it. And that kind of was a release. It was like letting air out of a balloon. And then I think it healed me along the way.
Were you trying to maybe subconsciously feel it from your dad's perspective?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I think about that a lot. Like what was, you know, what was he doing? I've heard some, again, we're talking about paranormal shit. I've heard some interesting theories and people medium saying some stuff, and I take it with a grain of salt. I don't know. But it was, I definitely think about that. Yeah. I was like, even part of me is like, there's a lot of things I miss out losing my dad was besides the obvious things. I'm like, damn, like right now, 35, this would be the best time to have my father. Like as a grown man, have those actual conversations as a man. Because, you know, as a 12-year-old boy, there's only so many things you could talk about and really understand who my dad was. Like, I want to know the weird shit he did, like, the bad shit he did. I want to know who he was. And so I always think, like, how did he handle it? You know, I try to think, like, if I was in a really tough situation, like, that's when the true colors come out. How are you going to respond? I'm like, did my dad try to help someone? Was he fucking pissed, scared? Like, I'm sure everyone was. Did he step up or did he suffer? So, but then I realized, you know, it's interesting to think about, but I'm like, he's gone. What happened? I can't keep constantly just replay that psycho. What happened? It's going to drive me nuts.
I think one day you'll know.
Yeah, I think so too. I think 100%. I think 100%.
So when did what was your kind of faith or belief around what happens when you die around this time?
When I was younger or just in general?
Yeah, I mean, when this happened, right? So you're 12. And I remember when I was 12, my grandfather was like the first big death that we had. And that one like crushed me. But I didn't really like, I think I was an atheist because my dad was an atheist, but my mother's side of the family is like typical Irish Catholic. So like I had this blend of a little bit of spirituality, but mostly like, no, like when we die, we just return to the earth and that's it. Like we're just, you know.
Yeah, I can't pinpoint it from an exact idea because I don't know how much I contemplated until I got older. But I mean, again, I was raised with the biblical aspect. So heaven, this or that, it was definitely more, we're going to see each other again.
Yeah.
But I didn't dive deep into it until like super older and thinking about all these, I'm not woo-woo, but I definitely, some people might think I am. And my philosophy is of what happens at this point. But I think growing up, it was definitely not an atheistic approach. Like I think my family, my mom's personal belief was, and my family, it was definitely more, we're going to see each other again.
Yeah.
Which may have been comforting at the time. But again, my blackout syndrome was just like, I almost have to ask my mom and sister for certain things. Like when I talked to my mom, my sisters, when I had a family episode, I was like, what was I like? Because it's like, and part of me was like, fuck, maybe that was a good thing for me to forget it because I didn't have to go through it. I'm like, was I an autopilot? Like, did I really grieve? Did I really suffer? Because I had a great childhood, even with that, the support system was out of control. And that's such a massive part of going through anything in life, let alone grief, is the support system. And not everyone has that, which is why I think these conversations are important because it gives someone who truly doesn't have that support some part of support. It doesn't have to be physical support like I had with the people around me because I almost give no credit to myself. It's all the people around me that guided me through this. Like I almost take no credit.
Right.
Take some credit. No, I'm just kidding. And that support system people have. Like I remember, I'll continue to rant. So for anyone that doesn't know me, I'm a ranter apparently. My mom almost died.
We like the term podcaster.
I'm a podcaster. There you go. Perfect. See? Choice of words. I remember my last year, my mom essentially died. She was heart was stopped for like 10 minutes or so. She had a whole other experience that you consider near death in a way. But the
I didn't know this.
It was wild. And so, but to tap into that real quickly, I remember being in the hospital and they would only let like two people at a time by her bed, but she's on a breathing tube. We didn't know she was going to survive. She somehow by a miracle made it to the hospital, which was already defying odds. And she's fine now, which is another miracle. And I remember being in the hospital, the nurses were being really nice, letting us all in. It was me, my sisters, my mom's partner, Ken, and even like some other people would come in, they would sneak us in. And we would stay there, just be by her side constantly, never leave her side. And then every time I would get up to go to the bathroom, I remember walking by another guy that was there in the ICU at the same time. And there was one person there, only one person, and then occasionally no one.
Yeah.
I remember just being there in that moment, which is wild because that experience of 9/11 and some other shit I've gone through, it's like it's prepared you for the next moment. Doesn't make it easier, but in a way, kind of to me at least, it prepped us. As a family, I feel like it prepped us. Still was hard as shit. All the emotions the same, but it's like, oh, okay, now I understand it differently. But I was in that moment, I remember looking, I'm like, damn, no, like we have five people around my mom, constantly people coming in, blessed. And then this man is just, I don't know what's happened to him. I don't know if he's fine, but he's just in the ICU. Not a good place to be.
Yeah.
And he had no one visiting him.
Yeah.
He had one person by his bed that I noticed wasn't empty, but then that person wouldn't be there. He's just in bed by himself. And it comes back like, fuck, not everyone has that. So I cursed, sorry. I cursed.
Fucking okay. Dude, not a problem. No, I want
to demonetize.
No, you're okay. Good. You're good.
But it was just, it correlates to that support system. And I was blessed to have that.
Yeah.
And I realized the sanctity of that. And not everyone has that.
Yeah.
There's ways to support other people, which is again, full circle of just like fucking just separate yourself from your biases and how you see things, this or that. And I know people can seem like an asshole. Maybe they are. But the way I see things, like, no, I think we're just having our own experience. And again, back to the woo-woo shit, it's like, I think that we're going to find out the real truth of it. And I just, it gives me grace with how I see other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
So have you ever had any experiences when somebody died, like any kind of experiences that you couldn't really explain?
Yeah. My mom. Yeah. That's my mom. It might be a whole nother podcast. I'll try to make it as concise as possible. But so the wild part was just like, give a fresh backstory of the chaotic nature of what happened. I was flying to Europe. And I flew from LA to London, and there's no Wi-Fi on the plane at the time. And I remember I landed in London, so it was like a 10-11 hour flight to go to London from LA. Turned on my phone, had an amazing conversation with this guy, and getting drunk on the plane. I was already going through some other stuff in my relationship that ended, so I was already feeling guilty going on this trip. Then this great conversation with this man for getting drunk for 8 hours. And then I land, turn on my phone, I get multiple calls from my sisters, which is weird. Like the way they reached out to me on WhatsApp, like they were trying to contact me. Like, this is same feeling, similar feeling of like approaching that house when I was 12. I was like, oh shit, something's happened.
And this message. They're both unexpected.
Yes.
Events.
And the wild part, my sister I said it to my sister. I was like, my sisters were waiting for me to come home that day. The whole day, besides what they were going through, they're like, we gotta tell David. We gotta tell David. David's like, we're not even here yet. We gotta wait for David to come home. My mom, we gotta tell David. Couldn't get in touch with him. We gotta wait for David to come home. Same fucking thing.
Yeah.
It's so wild. And now it's my mom, and now I'm older. And I remember calling her, and I was sitting on the airplane still, and she tells me what happened. Listen, mom went into cardiac arrest. She's made it to the hospital. She's like, you gotta come home. So I literally got out of Gatwick, booked the flight. The next one was like 5 hours, drove to London, went to the hotel. Just like, I'm in London by myself. Kind of like same thing, only it was like the same thing. That was the wild part. I was only older. I was like, instead of being in school, I'm somewhere else by myself.
Yeah.
Wondering what's happening, not knowing what's happening, even though I had more updates in this sense.
Yeah.
Another train ride to Heathrow, flew straight back same day. So I went from London to LA, back to Jersey in the same day. My sister's waiting for me. And there's another hour drive from the airport. Jacqueline's waiting for me. She tells the nurse can sneak us in. And I remember seeing my mom for the first time on a breathing tube, having a conversation with the nurse saying she's a DNR, she's a do not resuscitate, which we're like, what the fuck? Wait, why is she a DNR? And she didn't think she was, if this happened, her mom's been telling us, like, oh, it's going to happen when I'm like 80. But we ended up having my sister as the oldest, was like, you have the right to override the DNR, which you're like, yes. She's like, she's healthy. She's a healthy, young, fit woman. I would suggest taking her off. So we ended up having a conversation with my sister, not knowing what was going to happen. Fast forward back to the ICU the next day, my mom finally came out of it, was super drugged up. And when she started coming to, we knew she was going to be okay, kind of. We didn't know if brain damage. She's like, her memory was like a goldfish. Like she would repeat the same things when she was kind of out of it. But she kept saying, I saw, like, where's Grandpa? Where's my dad? We're like, what? She's like, where's Grandpa John? And she thought she was like being very drugged up still. She looks at us. She's like, hey, she's looking at, what do you mean? It's like, where's my dad? Where's Grandpa John? And we're like, what do you, like, Grandpa John, he's not here. He's like, he's in the hospital. He's like, that's why we're in the hospital. I'm like, she's like, not comprehending that she's in the robe,
right,
on the bed. And she's like, trying to get out of the bed. I try to get the nurse, like, you just placate my mom to say, there's no John Romano here. And then it was a whole process of 40 minutes trying to explain to my mom that she didn't remember that her dad died. She didn't remember that her mother died. So it was a 40-minute process of telling my mom that he's not alive. And again, with my beliefs, I was like mixing the logical aspect and the spiritual aspect, saying, okay, she's drugged up, just came out of a really wild experience. She's confused, but she kept bringing him up and saying she just saw him. I just saw my parents. She did not believe her parents are still alive. I had to like lean in. I just told her, like, Mom, Grandpa John, I was trying to break it down. You remember, have I met Grandpa John? I was like, I haven't met him. She's like, what? I was like, she started kind of coming to. I was like, he died before. He's not here, Mom. I don't tell you, your dad. And then she took it as if she just found out her father died. I just had to watch my mom re-grieve, learning her mother and her parents just died. Sobbing, complete new grief. Like, I just watched my mom find out her parents just died. Letting her, I wasn't like, no, this didn't happen. I was like, I believe you saw him. I believe that.
Yeah.
But like, he's not here.
Yeah.
Then she forgot again. And then she would cry again, forgot it. And then she's like, wait a minute. I do remember seeing him in Brooklyn. Then cry again because it was like a new experience. Fast forward to a couple of days later, besides that wild experience, she was like having trouble in the hospital. They called us and I was like, someone has to come. So I slept in the hospital with my mom for 2 days. The morning after, I remember my sister was saying, this is a long story, but we'll get there. And my sister, I woke up and my mom was like, where's David? I'm like, I'm David. What are you talking about? She's like, no, daddy. I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, she doesn't think, she thinks her husband's still alive. She thinks dad's still alive. So same thing, only I'm by myself this time. I'm like, Mom, do you remember where dad worked? She goes, yeah, the World Trade Center. I'm like, you remember what happened? She goes, yeah, but he got out. I'm like, my heart like dropped. I'm like, oh, no, he didn't get out. Like, dad, he died 23 years ago. And she's like, what are you talking? And then she starts, I have to watch my mom re-grieve the death of her husband. So I'm sitting there holding my mom's space with her. She's slowly, again, same thing, just re-grieving, sobbing as if she just found out her husband died. And I remember slowly again, she started remembering. She started remembering, like, oh my God, you're right. She started coming back. And then she started crying again because she's had a brand new experience not knowing her husband died. But all this kind of starting together where I left, my sister texts me and she goes, David, Mom just remembered at 12 o'clock. She goes, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, I went home to sleep. They relieved me. And they're like, Dad, my mom just remembered seeing Dad. I'm like, what? And before I found out the more information, I remember getting a message from a medium that I had on my show, same time, like 12:05. I just looked at my Instagram, saw and I had a message. It was from this medium who had a near-death experience, partially I tapped into. She just sends me info. She's like, hey, I'm thinking about you because I posted on Instagram, hey, I'm not going to be doing an episode. I have some shit going on.
Yeah.
She says, I'm sending love and light. So she didn't just say, hey, I saw your dad. She was like easing into it. I was like, it's wild that you just reached out to me at the exact same time, within minutes. The message might have even been there before my sister texted me. I'm happy you said that because like your dad just bothered me, as odd as it sounds, in the shower, and he had a message for your mom. So she sends this weird message saying, you know, your dad loves her, and she's been given the gift of time to start caring about herself more than she cares about other people. He says, I love you, but you're not. I want to see you as much as I want to see you, but I love you, and you got to go back.
Yeah.
And I was like, again, logical brain, spiritual brain. I'm like, that is wild that she's texting me and messaging me this message, not knowing the details, exactly what my sister was telling me at the same time she remembers seeing my dad.
Yeah.
And then weeks later, when she was able to come back to a little bit, she was saying, yeah, I remember being in a space. I remember seeing, I mean, I wasn't a body. I was in this place happy and giddy. I wasn't even thinking about you guys. I was home. I felt great. I was just kind of wandering all giddy into this space. I saw my parents. They were following me. My parents, she's like, leave me alone. Like, I'll be back, but I got to go. Then she saw my dad as like not even a physical body, but she knew as my dad, her brother, and both of them said to her, you're not supposed to be here. You got to go back. So she had two messages from her parents, my dad and her brother saying, you got to go back, and then snaps out of it and she comes back. Tied in with the message that the medium said to me at the same time before I got the full story, your dad said, you got to go back. You're not supposed to be here. I love you.
Yeah.
And also the message specifically that again just hits with us was that she's got to look after herself more than she looks after others. And me and my sisters were having the exact same conversation before. She's like, when she comes out of this, we were staying positive. When she comes out of this, I hope she relaxes and truly looks after us. She's very healthy, but like she's always worried about other people because she loves everyone so much, but she's a nurturer. Like,
yeah.
And we said the exact same message to each other, exactly as the medium, same time. And my mom felt that experience.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know what to tell you. Even my mom's not like, she's religious, but she's like, I don't know what that was. Like,
right.
But it was it was as real as it can be.
And that is, so first off, that's crazy. And, wow. but it's not, right? Like once you hear enough of these stories, you realize like, and like you were saying in the beginning, like there's a lot of bullshitters anywhere. Like you said, you can find a bad accountant. It's true. But you can tell when somebody's being truthful and you can tell when somebody has no dog in the fight and they're just like, look, you believe me or not. I don't care. This happened to me. Mm-hmm. This was this. I don't know what it is, but you know, like I heard so many stories from people that were credible, police officers, firefighters, all sorts of people where you could just tell when they're telling the story, like, okay, either this is the best liar on earth mm-hmm. or there's something to this, you know, cause you see so many of these and it's a real thing. And the reason why I asked that is, I had a couple experiences. Like my buddy died of cystic fibrosis, right? Through high school, like I had one of my best friends, and it's crazy because like I knew he was gonna die, right? Like you just know, like, you know, maybe you'll make it to 25, 30, but you're not gonna live a long life. Mm-hmm. And he ended up dying at 21. And the crazy thing is we hadn't talked for months. We hadn't talked for like maybe 6 months. Nothing wrong. We just, you know, I was in Boston, he was on the West Coast, like we just kind of lost touch for a little bit. And out of nowhere, I woke up one night and I was just like, dude, Michael's going to die. Like, talk about like getting out of bed, like a jolt out of bed. Michael's going to die. Like I just had this like knowing and I was like, that's fucking weird. You know, and at this time I didn't really believe any of this stuff, a little bit of the spiritual stuff, but didn't, you know. And so I tried to go back to bed. I remember I had to get up for work in the morning, so I'm trying not to look at my phone. But I got this like urge to send a message to my buddy, right? So I just shot him a text. Hey, thinking about you, miss you, dude, love you, peace. Immediately it was red. So I was like, oh, all right, cool. Like, you know how you read receipts? So I'm like, all right, cool. Went back to sleep, didn't think about it. Go to work, you know, not a day. I don't even think I thought about it from the time I woke up, right? It was just whatever. Right, once I saw he read that, I was like, all right, we're good. Go to work, normal day, come back home, same thing, right? Same kind of routine. Go to bed, same time, like 11:30, close to midnight, something. This, like, pull to get out of bed, check your phone. Michael is dead. And I'm in my head, like, I'm, like, going through the logical side. I'm like, why do I feel like this, you know? But I picked up my phone, and again, like, I hate touching my phone after I go to bed because it'll keep me up. The light just, it does it for me, right? Mm-hmm. And I saw on my phone that I got a text from my buddy, from Michael. So I'm like, oh, cool. All right. And I almost didn't read it, but I'm like, nah, so I got to, you know, check this out because this feeling is just like something. And I check my phone and it's from him. And I open the message and it said something along the lines of, hey, this is Angelina, which is his mom's name. Michael, 24 hours ago, went into a coma and he is actively dying. If you want to call me and say something to him, do it now. You know, so I got to say something through the phone to him, but dude, it was like, damn. It was like there was a knowing, bro.
Yeah.
And I get goosebumps thinking about it because I've had experiences like that. Like when my grandfather died, like my sister, it's kind of funny because my sister was on the West Coast. We were in Boston. My grandfather died and I was 12, same that you were when your dad died. And my mom was getting ready to call my sister. And I remember it was on like the, you know, the phone was on the wall, you know, the cord. Yeah. And I was like, can I tell her? Like I had this feeling to tell her. And she's like, sure. So I call and it goes to voicemail and they don't know that it's going to the voicemail. And I just go, Meg, grandpa's dead. Click. And everybody's like, what the fuck did you just do? and I was like, I don't know. I panicked. But she ended up calling back later that day and everybody was pissed at me. They're like, you fucking piece of shit.
That's a little abrupt. Yeah.
Yeah. And, everybody, she called back and she was like, I knew. And he was sick. Like everybody kind of knew that like it probably wasn't going to happen, but she knew before, like when she got the voicemail, she knew in her heart that he was gone.
Yeah. What's the message?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah.
I mean, I've same thing again, a lot of people want proof. If that's cool. If you need proof, then I'm not sure you're going to find it until you have these close experiences with people you trust. And again, it's different when it hits close to home with you. Until it happens, like I don't know if you're ever going to understand. My mom's partner lost his son, it was years ago, and he remembers, my mom tells him the same thing. She was there. He's like, there's on the kitchen table, and he just felt like a jolt, like go through his body. You didn't know what the hell it was? He's like, he says out loud, he's like, I think my mom just died. And he like took down the note of a time it was that he felt it, like 9:17 p.m. It turns out it was his son. And granted, he didn't hit the nail on the head with his son, but he's like, he felt anything. Yeah. He probably logically felt something, felt it was real, and then logically thought his mom, because she's older and his son's like 20 something, super young. But it ended up being his son who died at the exact same time. Like, it was like that, not that, whatever the time was, it was like around that exact same moment he was Layla confirmed of his time of death. And it's, again, you're not, what are you going to, it's people like, that's bullshit, whatever. I don't care, first of all. But I know that shit is real.
Yeah.
Like, to my heart, and I'm also saying, am I saying, I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Of course. I'm not saying it. We'll find out.
Right.
But there's just too much out there anecdotally. I know that's not going to hold in the court of law, but I don't care. To me, that resonates. There's too much. At some point, you got to be like, huh, that's interesting at least.
Yeah.
And it's like, you have, how many stories did you just rattle off?
Well, dude, I got one more that's probably the most powerful, right?
Jeez.
And this is, so I'll preface this by it was probably around 2001, my mother, who, again, spiritual, Catholic, but not religious, but always open to that kind of thing, she told me a story one time. And even though I didn't believe in a lot of this stuff, scary movies freaked me out so much that as a kid, your brain goes, mm-hmm. you know, so I was terrified of like ghosts and demons. Even though I didn't really think it was real, I was still like terrified of that. But my mom explained this experience that she had in this house that we lived in, which I always felt was just, the vibes were fucking weird, dude. But she explained this story about how she got this. She felt this presence, a negative presence, like the worst feeling, like a black cloud. I don't know how, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't understand it then. I do now, because I felt this. It was like the second I felt this, I knew what it was. But she basically explains this whole thing on like, she felt this just terrible, just darkness, just like pulling her soul out kind of feeling. And she said that she didn't know what it was, but she just screamed, go away. And the second she felt, she screamed that, she felt it just gone.
Damn.
Like she scared it away or something, right? And anyways, so I remember always thinking that like in the back of my head, that was something that always kind of stuck around. I don't know if I ever believed it, but it felt like the way my mom explained it was like something was real about it. Anyways, that was like early 2000s, but I always remember that story. And November 2019, around this time, actually about a week from today, November 2019, I'm upstairs in my first office, little tiny office upstairs, and I was building one of my businesses. And my friend and I were on a Zoom call. He was up in the Bay Area. I was here. And this office, there's like a big window, and I would sit, I don't know at the time if I think I sat away from the window. So my back was, so I could see the city view, and then behind me is a wall. And anyways, a tiny little office, like 1/10 the size of this room. And I'm on a Zoom call with my friend. I'm like, hey, I got to get up and go take a piss. He's like, all right, cool. And I've known this kid for almost my whole life. I go to the bathroom. I come back. And he is like, hey, dude, like, you messing with me? Like, what's up? And I'm like, what do you mean am I messing with you? Like, I just went to the bathroom. Now, I am the kind of guy that would fuck with him, right? And so he's justified in this. But he's like, dude, like, what are you, like, moving your watch around? Like, what are you doing? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, I saw the shadow, like, just going back and forth through your office. And we joke like that the office, you know, haunted, and there's been some weird experiences here, but it is just a joke. Right? I'm like, stop fucking. Now I'm thinking he's messing with me. Right. And so we're in like this weird little standoff where we think we're pranking with each other. Eventually we just move on. I go home that night and I lay in bed, and you know, I'm going to sleep. Nothing really out of the ordinary. But I get this feeling, bro, and it's literally what my mom described it. And the only way that I can describe it in my sense is like a physical pull. And you know, in Harry Potter, there was those things that flew around and they like suck the soul out of people. I don't know if they were Death Eaters or Dementors or whatever they were, but anyways, like these black like cloud people things, ghosts, demons, whatever you want to call them, that fly around and they like suck the soul out of people, like mm-hmm. Voldemort's creatures, whatever. Dude, that's what this felt like, man. This was like this, jeez, like the worst feeling I have ever felt. Like I was spiraling down this, like, bro, like bad, really, really bad. Talk about bad vibes, but then add like a physical like pull to your stomach. Like it was weird. And I remember the thing about my mom, and I literally like, I don't know if I yelled it or just kind of quietly said it because I felt dumb, but I was like, go away, you know? And dude, vanished, gone. What? Just like my mom said. And I was like, that's crazy.
What the hell?
And then anyways, so next day, I wake up, go to work, do my thing. I remember I signed up for this gym, and I was coming home right after I signed up for this gym, and my mom was like, or my girlfriend called me like three times, and I was like, that's kind of weird. And then my parents called me, and I ended up calling them back right when I walked in, and they told me that my sister had committed suicide the night before.
Oh.
She shot herself at their house, right? But dude, it was like when we kind of went through like the time of events, bro, it was like right then. Like within, they don't really know the exact time that it happened, but it was then, bro. Like I'm sure it was like right then, bro.
So how do you define that for you?
I don't know, dude. Like but I know it was something. It was like there was a presence there. And when this happened, I didn't really give it to, like, the next day, I don't even think I would have remembered this. This has probably happened before in my life, and I just wrote it off like, oh, I was just anxious or something, right?
Yeah.
But my sister was going through a lot, right? But, dude, there was a negative fucking presence there, bro. Like, it was realer than anything I can explain. And... you know, how do I describe it, like, or define it?
Yeah, I mean, like, besides it just being an experience to you that is, like, you know, wild.
Yeah.
Did it shift anything in regards to, I guess, your grief with your sister or just
well, anything so, we're talking so there's about? Two sides of this. There's two sides of this because there was that, which disappeared pretty much right away. But I felt like, you know how like people say like there's demons attached to people or whatever. People have their own, you know, whatever. I felt like whatever was haunting my sister was that same thing. I don't know how to describe that. But whatever that was gone from my sister. And then it came to me or something. Like, I don't know, dude, but it was.
So you said your sister was, I'm just spitballing here, so don't.
Yeah, yeah, please.
You said your sister was going through some stuff.
Oh, yeah, for like years. Like, yeah, she had just moved back in with my parents and like got out of a long relationship and was going through like really bad mental health issues. Yeah.
Would it ever be correlated to like, for instance, like the story, like you said, you had the other story, you felt a jolt that your friend died.
Yeah.
And perhaps that wasn't, how did he die again? You tell me.
Cystic fibrosis.
Right.
So yeah. So like complications.
Just complications.
Yeah.
And I wonder if in the same story that I had with my, mom's partner feeling that jolt and thought his mother died, but ended up being his son.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if it's a similar intuition / messaging, but just the way that your sister did it.
It
was such a human negativity kind of thing, as you, without lack of better words, that as opposed to it being like some evil spirit or entity, maybe it was just some kind of similar vibration or frequency of what she was
or her,
feeling.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, that's a really good way to put it. And again, like, I think around this time is when I really dove like headfirst into like the near death experiences and trying to like make sense and grieving and all that. And I think that the thing that stuck out is when you hear a lot of people like near death experiences, when they commit suicide, they're fucking dark. And it seems to be a correlation of like where, just like you were saying with psychedelics, like the mind state you're in when this happens, mm-hmm. you experience it based off of that. So
maybe you were feeling what she was feeling.
That's what I'm thinking, bro. Like, it was, I can't imagine living with that, you know?
Yeah, who knows if that, you know, exactly. Again, we're going down a rabbit hole of thoughts because, I mean, that's an incredibly painful experience that you went through.
Yeah.
For anyone to go through that.
But just to, because there's another side of it. At the same time after this happened, for the next couple months, like, dude, I don't know if I just couldn't process it well, but I could not get sad for more than 5 minutes. It would hit me hard, bro. Like I would listen, like a song would come up, you know, and it would hit me hard. But then it was like, I would get this peace, bro. This peace, like she was like over me or like something was like, dude, it's good.
Exactly.
This is how it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Everything's going to be good. Everything happens for a reason. But this is how my story was supposed to end. I don't know how to describe it. It was like this feeling. Yeah, but like Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's probably, again, at the end of the day, you feel good. You feel as good as you can be about it. You said you found peace. You feel like she's like, where are you at with
her now? I don't know. I think I blocked a lot of it out, you know?
How long has it been now?
2019.
2019.
Yeah.
I mean, you're clearly, even if you're saying you blocked it out, it doesn't, maybe at some point you did. I don't know. That's your perspective there, but you know, the way you're talking about it now, it doesn't seem like it's blocked out. It seems like you're really thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried to dive into it. You know, it's just still pretty painful.
Of course.
You know.
Yeah, it's not always a hierarchy to how things go, but you know what you and your family had to endure, it sucks. It's sad, but I mean, at the same time, the way you just painted it, regardless of beliefs, it seems like what you believe, which is all that matters.
Yeah.
It's like, I just love the way you said it. It's like, you know, you believe she's good. I believe she's good without even knowing your sister.
Yeah.
That's just, again, beliefs. And I think the way you painted it is, if that hits you well, then that's it.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah. And that's it. And again, like, it comes down to, like, human beings. We always want that answer. Sometimes you got to be okay, like, not knowing.
Yeah.
Or trusting.
I think it comes down to that trust. And based on the conversation that you and me had, and just from man to man, you and me, it's like, I think we have similarities on believing there's more. You had your own personal experience of thinking, oh, I'm good.
Yeah.
We shared stories back and forth, like, oh, we're good. So with my head of thinking that the people that we lost, your sister, my dad, anyone, it's like, even though the pain you're specifically with your sister was going through here,
mm-hmm.
back, kind of encompassing everything we spoke about based on what we're chopping up, but maybe so. It's like, we both agree in our personal beliefs that it's going to be all right. That's A.
Yeah.
So therefore, by subsequently thinking of that theory, she's good, he's good. And granted, we still suffer on this world. That's just part of it. But at the end of the day, if based on what our beliefs, if she's good, then it's like, okay, it's okay. Then I can be good. We're the ones that are left over with the shit. People die.
Yeah, right.
It's a human thing.
Yeah.
But death, maybe death isn't real in that aspect, but it's like, we're the ones that are left with it.
Right.
We're the ones that are left with it. And I think based on everything you explained to me, what you've experienced personally, it seems like it's something to cling on to, that she's good.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, I'm not saying what a lot of people say, oh, she's in a better place. I don't know. I'm just bouncing off what you believe.
Yeah.
So if you personally believe that, then it's like, all right, now you got to take care of yourself.
Yeah. It's funny how humor is a big piece of grieving, right?
Because it's the best.
Yeah. And dude, my sister and I, and my brothers, so I have two brothers and a sister and then me. And we all had we all had kind of traumatic childhoods. Like my dad's a Vietnam veteran. He has dealt with more trauma than anybody. And we had a lot of trauma growing up that we didn't really even know was trauma. And, but we all had dark, dark senses of humor, like brutal, you know? And I remember when we were there for the funeral, you know, my brother's in town and my mother, who's very sweet and very emotional and, you know, she wanted to like have everybody write, they have like a physical fireplace. She wanted everybody to write a note to my sister on a plate and like put it in the fireplace and it would go up to her. I don't know. It was my mom's way of grieving. Right. Mm-hmm. And my brother and I are in the kitchen and we're kind of just like, you know, we're like writing the notes. And I remember like I was like, yeah, my sister's like up in heaven. Like, why am I getting all these fucking plates? Like,
why
are you giving me trash? Like, yeah. You know, just, you know, there was something that we still laugh about, you know, but, and I know my sister would too. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think the humor aspect is not for everyone.
Yeah.
I think it should be for everyone. It could be for everyone. And sometimes there's a time and a place. Like, I'm not just going to crack a messed up joke if I'm not reading the room correctly.
Yeah.
But for me, again, it's like, I think it just brings levity, and it's not to insult the situation deeply.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. Laughter is the best for me. It makes me feel better.
Yeah.
It makes people feel better. It takes a momentary moment. It gives you a momentary bliss in a shitty situation. Even if it's for a moment, it just kind of like,
and
it fucking works. Humor is the greatest medicine to me.
Yeah.
And that's how I do it. And whether it's funny or not to you, you know what I mean? It's for me.
Yeah.
And then if I find an opportunity, and if I know my people, like certain like friends, if they're in a shitty, I could hopefully read the room.
Yeah.
But I think laughter for me has been a massive part of my process.
Yeah.
And wherever that came from before, I don't know.
Right.
I think I've always had a silly family.
Yeah.
I think I'm definitely the black sheep and the more darker one in the family when it comes to that. But
yeah,
I don't know where it came from, but for whatever reason, I found laughing as a saving grace.
Yeah. Well, so everybody, if you're listening to this and you're wondering where you can follow David, we're going to have all the links in the bios, no matter where you're watching or listening to this. Please go follow this man's podcast. It is exceptional, and it's very different from anything else. Is there anything you want to leave the audience with before we wrap this one up?
No, I want to thank you for the opportunity to give me this opportunity and to talk. You're awesome. Thank you for sharing some of your stories. Whether you use this for the podcast, I want to share one thing that my sister sent me today, because I know we're talking about afterlife, near death, and that, which is a big part of it. My sister sent me a quote from a song that I've never heard, and I just want to like share this one words. I'm not a poet. This is going to hopefully not sound too corny, but part of the lyrics in relation to what we're saying is, it's knowing that this can't go on forever. Likely one of us will have to spend some days alone. Maybe we'll get 40 years together, but one day I'll be gone, or one day you'll be gone. And maybe the time running out is a gift. I'll work hard until the end of my shift. And I think the quote specifically with this is meaning is that we're not here forever. And it comes back to accepting it and understanding that it's going to be okay. But the beauty of thinking about that we're going to lose each other and that we're all going to die is that, yeah, you can take it as a scary thought, but it's a gift, because all it does for me personally, take it as you want. So with the idea of losing someone and the experience that you've had losing someone, that pain that you feel to me literally represents love. And for me, I will gladly exchange the experience of love for the pain that we are inevitably going to feel. But that idea of knowing that we're not here forever with the people we're around only to me is not to be looked at as in a sad way. It's literally to be looked at and be grateful of having it now and make that moment now more powerful. And again, that's the whole purpose of facing death in any direction, because it'll make you appreciate every moment that we have right now, knowing that it's going to end. And that's all I can say about it.
Fuck yeah. What's that song?
That's a good question. She texted me. I could find it. I don't want to like have empty space. Oh, sorry. If We Were Vampires. And I think Jason Isabel is the original guy. But If We Were Vampires, beautiful song.
Yeah. I know somebody's going to, that's going to be in the comments.
Yeah. It's a fire ass song. You know, I kind of read a couple of the quotes out of, listen to the song. I think I listened to it four times on the way here, kind of tearing up, but here we are. Thank you again, man. I appreciate it.
Bro, thank you. We'll have to do this again.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Cool. Thanks. Thank
you. Cheers.